Podcast, a weekly podcast about all things animation, brought to you by Filmbook. My name is Matt Brunet, but some of you may know me as Animat from my YouTube channel, Electric Dragon 505, home of web series that are all about animation, including Animation Look Back and Animat's Reviews. If this is your first time here in the Animation Podcast, well, I've already said all of my welcomes, so you are glad to stay and listen to me talking about animation. But specifically, though, it will be about the latest news that happened this week. So, for example, on today's episode, what I'm going to be talking about will include the announcements of a Trolls 2. Then afterwards, we will be discussing about the first look into the DuckTales reboot. Then afterwards, we will be discussing the Lego Batman movie, where apparently some critics are saying that it has a gay agenda. Then afterwards, we will be looking at another gay thing going on, but this time it's in the upcoming live-action reboot of Beauty and the Beast. And then finally, we have Matt's Pick of the Week. If you want to check out more episodes of the Animation Podcast, then all you have to do is head on down to Filmbook, that is film-book.com, by searching the Animation Podcast. And you can also email us at podcast@filmbook.com with the Animation Podcast in the subject line. Okay, so the first story that I have for you guys today, it's going to be down at DreamWorks Animation, where apparently they have announced that they are going to be making a sequel to one of their new IPs. Now, as you guys are probably aware, DreamWorks has a lot of new IPs that has yet to earn a sequel. The closest that we've ever got to that would be to The Croods, and unfortunately, due to complications, The Croods 2 is never going to happen. And the last time that a new DreamWorks IP did get a sequel would be How to Train Your Dragon. So what would it be? And it is really tough to consider nowadays, since a lot of DreamWorks' new IP movies didn't necessarily make a lot at the box office. Like, when you look at Mr. Peabody and Sherman, Rise of the Guardians, Turbo, and all of those movies, or even Home, like, a lot of these are flops, but at best, they're just modestly profitable. That's pretty much it. Like, they didn't reach the levels of success of movies like Shrek or Kung Fu Panda or Madagascar or any of those films. However, surprisingly enough, this movie in particular, DreamWorks actually felt that there needs to be more of it. And they decided apparently it's Trolls. So yes, DreamWorks Animation has officially announced that there is going to be a Trolls 2. However, they did not leave any more information regarding what's going to be going on with it. The only thing that we know so far is just that Anna Kendrick and Justin Timberlake are going to be reprising their roles as Poppy and Branch, and that the movie will have a release date of April 2020. We don't know if there's going to be a new plot, or we don't know what the plot is going to be about. We don't know who's going to be added in as, like, the new characters or, like, the new stars that are going to be joining in to the movie. And we don't even know if the directors or writers are going to be returning to this project as well. All we know is just that the two main characters are coming back and we have a release date. That's pretty much it. And honestly, for me, I find it to be rather surprising. Because number one, as a movie in itself, I think we can all agree that Trolls is not necessarily DreamWorks' best animated feature. I mean, sure, the visuals are definitely fantastic, and the animators did a great job with it, but in terms of story and characters and all that kind of stuff, it really is rather weak. Like, you know, it's made more, like, you could tell that this is the kind of movie that's trying to make more, like, for merchandising purposes than to actually have a movie in itself. And especially when, like, you got a whole bunch of characters there and they barely do anything. Like, this is just the story of Poppy and Branch, while everyone else is just filler. And, like, you got a whole bunch of modern pop references, along with the fact that this is a jukebox musical. Everybody is out there just trying to sing modern pop versions of a variety of songs. They could be like oldies from the 60s, or they could be pretty recent from a few years ago. You do have a bit of a mix on that. And not only the movie is just more like not DreamWorks' strongest, but there's also the factor that it really didn't make a lot of money at the box office. I mean, I'm not saying that it's a flop. It is far from being in the levels of something like Mr. Peabody and Sherman or Penguins of Madagascar. It's just that it's only modestly successful. By the time that I am recording this, it made about $340 million worldwide at the box office. That's not even as much as Home. And honestly, that is rather surprising because whenever DreamWorks would want to immediately go and make a sequel, that would usually be reserved for movies that would end up making more than $500 million at the box office, like The Croods or How to Train Your Dragon or Kung Fu Panda, or at least somewhere close to those levels. So it is a rather unusual choice why they would go and take something like Trolls and go actually create a sequel for it. Like, honestly, I imagine that if they really wanted to go and continue making more with the Trolls, I imagine they would just go and make a Netflix series out of it. Because, like, especially with the art style that it has, it definitely has the potential to be very well translated from the movie and to do something with 2D Flash animation as just a series, you know? I thought that would be a good idea there, but no, it seems that DreamWorks really wanted to do more. So with that said, it had me really thinking. Like, I had to really sit there and try to think to myself, like, why is it that DreamWorks would really want to do a sequel to Trolls, even though Trolls is not necessarily their strongest movie, both critically and financially? And I know, like, some people might bring up the Rotten Tomatoes score and stuff like that, but I mean, when you look at the score itself that the critics would give them, like, normally you would see them give somewhere around, like, an okay rating, like around either 6, 5, or 4, somewhere around those levels. So it had me thinking, so this is not DreamWorks' strongest movie at all, but why is it that they really wanted to go and make a sequel? And I thought about it. It's not necessarily the movie itself why they want to make a sequel. It's because of everything around it. And I have two big reasons to why, or two big evidence to why is it that for DreamWorks, Trolls was a massive success. And number one, it is the soundtrack. Now, anybody who has seen the movie or who has at least known what the movie is about, they know that music plays a huge factor in the movie. Like, it is a jukebox musical, so they do have moments where they would go and sing, and it would play a key element in this feature. You know, that's what, it's a big engine to move this movie forward. And when you look at the soundtrack itself, that thing right there is actually highly successful. We can even debate if it's even more successful than the movie itself. Allow me to explain. Now, I actually have Wikipedia right in front of me, and I checked on all the sources that it has, and it is actually pretty legit. So, in terms of its commercial performance, the soundtrack peaked at number one on the ARIA charts, number three on the US Billboard 200 album chart, number four on the New Zealand album chart, and number four on the UK album chart. It received a platinum certification by the Recording Industry Association of America. So this is a platinum album, and the Australian Recording Industry Association. So both in the US and in Australia, it's pretty much a bestseller. It's pretty much went platinum. The lead single, Can't Stop the Feeling, performed by Justin Timberlake, was released on May 6, 2016, and reached number one on the chart on 17 countries, including the US Billboard Hot 100. So the soundtrack was a massive success, and especially with Can't Stop the Feeling. In fact, let me go more into it with the awards that Can't Stop the Feeling actually got. So, apparently, Can't Stop the Feeling won the Grammy Award for Best Song Written for Visual Media and was nominated for the Academy Awards for Best Original Song. Timberlake received the Hollywood Song Award for Can't Stop the Feeling at the 2016 Hollywood Film Award and won for Song in Animated Film at the 2016 Hollywood Music in Media Awards. It also was nominated for Golden Globe for Best Original Song, Critics' Choice Award for Best Song, and Satellite Award for Best Original Song. So that's the big thing. Not only is the soundtrack a huge bestseller, but Can't Stop the Feeling itself is also a giant success. It's pretty much the next Happy. Like, you know how it went, like when Happy was released, it was a part of Despicable Me 2, and then Happy suddenly just became the biggest thing on its own, like right after the Oscars. And with Trolls, Can't Stop the Feeling is the new big single right now. And because of all the nominations that it has gathered, and especially the big one being the Oscars, which because of Can't Stop the Feeling, we have to pretty much say that Trolls is actually an Oscar-nominated film. Kind of like in the same veins that Suicide Squad is an Academy Award-winning feature. I mean, sure, like, the component to why it got recognized at the Oscars is rather small. Like, for Trolls, it's because of a little piece of music. For Suicide Squad, it's because of the hair and makeup. But regardless, it still earned that title. And when DreamWorks would go and get an Oscar nomination, usually they would make a big deal out of it. Like, this is amazing news for them. I mean, it hasn't happened that an original DreamWorks animated feature that is not a sequel that actually did get an Oscar nomination for whichever. Like, it doesn't have to be just Best Animated Feature, but for anything, the last time that it happened was The Croods back in 2013. Or in 2014 at the Oscars, but you guys know what I mean. So it is a pretty big deal that DreamWorks did get an Oscar nomination. So that is a massive vehicle. So yeah, that's big. That's the big reason number one is because of the soundtrack and also for Can't Stop the Feeling. And then you got reason number two. Now technically, the soundtrack could also encompass this, but this is a huge factor. Like, maybe this is a bit of an afterthought, but there is a lot of truth to it. And that is merchandising, where the real money for the movie is made. Trolls the t-shirt, Trolls the coloring book, Trolls the lunchbox, Trolls the breakfast cereal, Trolls the flamethrower. The kids love that one. So yeah, merchandising plays a giant factor. I mean, really think about it. When was the last time that you have been to a big superstore like Walmart or even at a mall or something like a Walmart or Macy's or Toys R Us or Target or any of these things? I can guarantee you when you go in there, you will see the same amount of Trolls merchandising as you would the same amount of like Despicable Me merchandising or Frozen merchandising or Disney merchandising or Secret Life of Pets merchandising. It became a huge factor. And in the same ways, like a lot of people have said for the longest time that DreamWorks Trolls is pretty much DreamWorks' answer to Sony's Smurfs, where it started out as a big piece of merchandising now turned into a feature film. And with Trolls, it definitely is for real. Like, it started out as a series of toys, and eventually it would grow into something bigger. And because of this movie, now we just got a variety of stuff. We got like a whole bunch of toys, we got a whole bunch of dolls, we got a whole bunch of t-shirts, clothing lines, whatever. Like, Trolls is pretty much everywhere, and even to this day, you see it going around. So there must be something in the marketing that it really did work, that it really sold off big for DreamWorks. So basically, they're making a sequel not because of the movie itself, but because of everything around the movie, because of how the soundtrack was a huge success, more so than the movie itself, and because of how the merchandising really reaped in the money for DreamWorks. And that's why, so when a sequel will come out, and they did state that it is going to be a musical comedy, they will have a new soundtrack that they are hoping that they can make another Can't Stop the Feeling. And there is definitely going to be more merchandising where there's going to be brand new toys featuring, like, the brand new characters. Or, like, maybe, the same old characters, but in new attire. So they, like, there's definitely a lot of options out there. In a way, this is not just DreamWorks' answer to Sony's Smurfs. This is pretty much DreamWorks' answer to Pixar's Cars, where they're not making more sequels because the movies are fantastic. In fact, some people can argue that the Cars movies are the weakest of the Pixar bunch, but it's because of the merchandising. And keep in mind, with Cars, like, the amount of stuff that they can sell with it, with all the toys, they can go for, like, billions. Trust me, it's a serious moneymaker at Disney, which is why Disney is somehow making a big deal at one of their weakest franchises that they have made. And it's the same thing with Trolls. They've made a lot of money in terms of the marketing and everything around the movie, but not specifically the movie itself. So yeah, that's pretty much my ideology to how DreamWorks would come up with an idea to go and create a Trolls 2. So if you actually are excited to go and see Trolls 2, then all you have to do is just wait for April 10th, 2020, for the movie to be released. But for now, relax with all the toys that you got and with the soundtrack. Okay, so for our next story right here, we're going to be going into Disney, speaking of elements of Disney and stuff like that. And so far, in terms of the TV shows that they got, there are a lot of them that are quite anticipated and did make a lot of news. I mean, of course, there are a lot of them that are based on their movies, their recent feature films, in fact, with Tangled Ever After is making a lot of big news, and a lot of hype is actually going on for that. And then there's also the Big Hero 6 series. But possibly their most anticipated TV show that they got so far lined up for 2017 has to hands down be the reboot to DuckTales. And so far, beforehand, we've only known little things about it. Like, we know that the design and the look of the entire show is going to be reminiscent to the comic art style of Carl Barks. And we did get a glimpse of who the cast is going to be. But now, Disney XD has actually given us, they've given us our first look on how the DuckTales reboot is going to look like. And it almost clocks in at 2 minutes, just basically giving us a little idea of how the DuckTales reboot is going to work. So what we have gathered is that it's going to be, a reboot. It's going to be a retelling of the original DuckTales story, where Donald Duck decided to bring his nephews to Scrooge McDuck's Manor, and then they would end off going on to crazy treasure hunting experiences. And the way that they execute it, however, it definitely is brand new. Now, let me just get into probably what is the best components onto the series that I am looking into so far, and that is actually, believe it or not, the voice cast. Now, they're actually going into a completely different route than what has already been done onto the original series or the previous incarnations, or at least most of it. Especially, like, there are some people that are trying to do the same thing, like with Launchpad McQuack, and also bringing in Tony Anselmo doing Donald Duck, of course. But the biggest difference is actually with Huey, Dewey, and Louie, and Webby. What they decided to do is that they decided to go outside of what has already been done, like basically impersonating Donald Duck, and mostly trying to be more of their comedic selves. Like, as you guys may know, in the cast, we got Bobby Moynihan, Danny Pudi, and Ben Schwartz as Huey, Dewey, and Louie, and then you also got Kate Masucci as Webby. And honestly, they definitely are some of the funny, like, they definitely presented some of the funniest bits in this first look. They did a great job bringing in a new version that is actually surprisingly welcome. Like, on paper, I'm sure that this wouldn't fly for people, but in execution, this is actually very well done. And a part of it is also because of the writing itself. The writing does seem like it could show some promise as well, where like the comedic tone is actually very spot on, and you could tell they can absolutely deliver into the comedy. Like, for me, my favorite part in all of this first look has to be when Webby is freaking out over Huey, Dewey, and Louie actually being in Scrooge McDuck's manor. And, like, she's, like, going around asking all these questions. And then the last one was, who's the evil one among the triplets? And without hesitation, they just went, Louie. And just like that. And it actually really does work. It's actually surprising that the new take on Huey, Dewey, and Louie is actually entertaining. It's actually a lot of fun. But then you also have David Tennant as Scrooge McDuck. Now, this guy actually has a huge responsibility to play. He is the first guy ever to actually take Alan Young's place to play as Scrooge McDuck, or at the very least, the first guy to take to play as Scrooge McDuck after the passing of Alan Young. And honestly, yeah, there is definitely a big difference between David Tennant's and Alan Young's performance, but honestly, David Tennant is not trying to be Alan Young. He's trying to portray the spirit of Scrooge McDuck and try to be who he is on the inside. Like, what makes Scrooge McDuck Scrooge McDuck? And it works. It actually legitimately works. And, you know, it's actually a lot of fun to listen to this new version of DuckTales. I mean, considering how everybody else is not necessarily trying to do the same thing, especially with the nephews, it is a lot more welcoming. We are a lot more accepting in terms of the new things that are going on. But honestly, looking back at the old DuckTales and what they're going to do here, yeah, there are definitely some similarities, and you could tell that it is trying to go and try to capture the moments that are very action-packed. But one big difference that I do notice is that apparently Donald Duck might actually play a big role, considering that in the first look, Webby did actually hype up that Donald is actually like this amazing adventurer. He's kind of like this secret agent in a way that Huey, Dewey, and Louie are not necessarily aware about. So Donald could actually play a big part. And also on top of like joining on the side with Launchpad McQuack, which honestly, I am a little bit disappointed that they didn't bring in the original actor to return and reprise his role, considering that they want to go and try to redo the entire cast, have like an entirely new crew onto it. But honestly, they could have, like, honestly, I feel like they should have brought back the original Launchpad McQuack. I mean, like, you do have Tony Anselmo as Donald Duck. You're not even going to bother replacing him, of course. But honestly, like, why not bring in the original Launchpad McQuack, you know? Like, he's still working. He would still be willing, I'm sure. So why not go and do that, honestly? Now, if I do have a little bit of a criticism with this, with the first look that we have, I would have to say is that even though the writing is very promising and the voice cast definitely seems top-notch for this project, the animation, however, it's more, I honestly don't know. It's not the best, to be very honest. It doesn't really seem that promising. Like, I understand, I said that apparently this is supposed to be modeled after the comic art style of Karl Barks, but even at that, it just, a lot of it seems rather blocky, and it just, I don't know, a lot of it, like, when it moves, like, you could definitely tell that this is just cheap flash animation, so I don't really know. I'm not saying it's the worst, but you know, like Disney has definitely done a lot of better animation in terms of their recent TV shows. That's the one that I'm not completely sold yet. But in terms of everything else, like the writing and especially the voice cast, I am definitely sold on it. And if you guys are excited to see DuckTales making a great big comeback, then all you have to do is just wait until this summer till we see the all-new DuckTales. Okay, so for our next story, we basically have something that I would like to call stupid people reacting stupidly to animated films, thus making themselves look absolutely stupid. And that's basically the case of what happened right over here, when a bunch of critics don't seem to be happy over a new animated feature for a very small component that they absolutely do not understand. And I am talking, of course, about the Lego Movie, where apparently there's a couple of critics out there that are not happy over the fact that, how can I put this? That the movie has a gay agenda. I know, it sounds weird, but allow me to explain. Now, going into my source here on IndieWire, it has stated that there's this one critic, John Henry Western of the website Voices of the Family, claims that the hit animated movie is riddled with homosexual elements. Western focused particularly on the long-standing thematic elements of Bruce Wayne's dual identity as Defender of Gotham and Billionaire Playboy, and cites PJ Media's Michael Hamilton's review, which argued that because Robin views Batman and Bruce Wayne as separate identities, he views them as his two fathers, and thus this becoming a subtle promotion of gay adoption, which the filmmakers are trying to force onto its viewers. Force onto? Really, dude? Alright, so, there is also a little bit more here that, in numerous other reviews, film critics roundly, the Lego Batman movie agrees that the film is absolutely hilarious. So Western claims that the writers placed their supposed pro-gay agenda as a higher priority than the film's comedy doesn't carry much weight. So apparently this critic right here seems to be so triggered about the fact that there might be some gay elements in here, to the point that it doesn't matter if the movie is funny. It has gay elements, thus it's bad. But anyways, there is more. Western and Hamilton's argument doesn't end there, however. Yes, that is actually pretty true, because even though there is that small little moment of Robin having two dads, might seem like a little gay hint right over there, but there is actually more, and probably a bigger one. Hamilton explains that the relationship between Batman and the Joker is homoerotic, citing that Batman's breakup with the Joker in the early portion of the film. They're subtle enough most people won't notice, sorry about that, let me just read you that for a second, that just seemed a little bit too off. They're subtle enough that most people won't notice, but failing to notice grants them normalcy, as though you'd be crazy or cruel to suggest anything was amiss here. So yeah, that's basically the whole thing that is going on, is that you got a couple of critics here that are absolutely triggered over the fact that there seems to be these subtle gay moments in the Lego Batman movie. All right. Now, let me just start this off by just saying that if you are too angry at the Lego Batman movie and try to bash it so much just for the factor that it might have some gay elements, then honestly, you're probably a little too stupid to watch this movie. I'm honestly going to say that right there. You are honestly way too dumb to understand any of this. You're already too stupid to understand that, like, you're too stupid to not understand how homosexuality works in life in general. But, like, just being so triggered about this, yeah, that really takes a lot of legitimacy out of you. Now, the biggest reason I say that is because you really don't get it. Because the big thing about the Lego Batman movie is that it's supposed to be a satire of the franchise. That's the whole thing. It's just a satire. So let's go into the two components that seems rather gay in here. Okay, so number one, you got Robin. Basically Robin seeing Bruce Wayne and Batman as his two dads. Now, just because that he views both Batman and Bruce Wayne as a parental figure, that doesn't necessarily make them gay. Now, it does happen that there are two guys that are not necessarily in a relationship who have to go and take care as a kid, and the kid will see them as their, like, as just two dads in general. It doesn't mean that, like, you know, it's like having two dads doesn't make them a gay couple. It just means that they're two male figures who have to go and take care of this one kid. And that's basically what's going on in here. Robin never stated that Batman is in a relationship with Bruce Wayne. He's just this happy-go-lucky kid who is just so happy over the fact that he is officially adopted and the fact that he has parents. That, like, it doesn't matter if it's a man or a woman or a woman or a woman or a man and a man. He's just happy to be a part of a family. And so he just made the subtle conclusion that he has two dads. So yeah, that's basically reason number one. Just because a kid has two male figures as parents doesn't necessarily make them gay. And then number two, we have the relationship between Batman and the Joker. Okay, so this is where the satire part comes in. Honestly, when I first heard about this little report here on IndieWire, I first thought that they would be complaining about this component a lot more. The small element of gay adoption, that kind of threw me off. But yes, like, you do see a bit of this gay relationship going on with the Joker and Batman. But again, it's all supposed to be a satire. It's supposed to be a satire of how the Joker is regarded as Batman's greatest enemy. But because Batman is so self-centered, he doesn't care about anyone. He only cares about himself. So he doesn't necessarily have a greatest... To paraphrase Batman, he doesn't necessarily have a greatest enemy. He just has a bunch of people to stop them from committing crimes and stuff like that. You know, he likes to fight around. That's the whole point of it. And yeah, in a way, you do see it as the Joker is in a relationship with Batman. The Joker thinks he's in a relationship with Batman, but that's not necessarily the case. It's more like the whole aspect right there, it's supposed to present Batman on how he's so self-centered, which, spoiler alert, later on in the movie, he's supposed to, look at that moment and realize that he's so selfish and that he doesn't care about others, including his enemies, which he ended up hurting them emotionally, where, he needs to have, an actual greatest enemy or worst nemesis or something like that in order to go and have a title for the villains, you know, to know who specifically to go fight against. And you know, honestly, it really does work. It's actually really, really smart. But yeah, just because of these critics' homophobias that, immediately when they see that, they're like, ew, no, no, I don't want that. That's a bad thing. No. You know, it just really makes them dumb and honestly really makes them illegitimate as critics, honestly. If you really cannot see, if you cannot look past of the little subtle, LGBT elements onto this and you cannot see, the purpose of it, you're really bothered over the fact that it's in there, then really, what are you doing, dude? Like, why are you even doing this job? Like, just get out of it. You're clearly not freaking qualified. If you're freaking if your godforsaken homophobia is really going to bother you much. I mean, like, just saying that in the future, there's going to be a lot more movies that might feature gay characters, especially in animated films or family films or even kids films. So, like, this is just the very beginning. If you're going to complain now, then honestly, go quit your job before it's godforsaken too late. Just saying. But yeah, overall, these are just really dumb critics not really understanding what the Lego Batman movie is all about. Okay, but speaking of gay characters and the LGBT community, we are going to keep this theme a little bit, and we are going to be looking on another movie that will have a gay character. But this one really spread all over the news, and it made such a big splash, and this is actually regarding a movie that is going to be released very soon, and people are pretty much expecting it's going to bring in so much money, which is the live-action reboot of Beauty and the Beast. And apparently, it has been revealed that there is a gay character, which is LeFou, believe it or not. Yes, Gaston's little sidekick is actually gay. Now, apparently, this has been revealed in Attitude magazine from director Bill Condon, and he stated, LeFou is somebody who one day wants to be Gaston, and on another day wants to kiss Gaston. He's confused about what he wants. It's somebody who just realizing that he has these feelings, and Josh makes something really subtle and delicious out of it. And that's what has its payoff at the end, which I don't want to give it away. But it is a nice exclusive gay moment in a Disney movie. And people are pretty much citing this moment as a big deal because this is the first time ever that Disney would actually have an openly gay character in one of their movies. Now, some people could debate that there have been a few gay characters before in Disney projects. In fact, there have been debates going on rather if the two policemen in Gravity Falls are actually a gay couple. I think Alex Hirsch actually confirmed that they are gay, but we don't really see them as an actual couple. Something like in the veins of in the Loud family, you know what I mean? But yeah, now we do have a legitimate gay character in here. Now, if I may put on my two cents onto this situation right over here, to be very honest, I am a little bit concerned. It's not necessarily the fact that they are bringing in a gay character in a Disney movie. I am definitely all for it, and I'm definitely happy that Disney is going to do something like this. But the one thing that I'm worried about is if they're going to really force in so much on that gay element, that they're really going to make LeFou such a huge character that they're going to really distract themselves from the actual movie and try to really push in this gay element to really show LeFou going around going like, I'm gay and I'm proud and all that kind of stuff, you know? The reason why I'm showing this little thing of worrisome is because, I look back at Maleficent or the Alice in Wonderland movies, and they try desperately hard to push in, this pro-feminism message. So the biggest issue that I have with most of these Disney live-action reboots, and especially the ones written by Linda Wolverton, is that they really try desperately hard to go and be progressive. They're really forcing it in instead of actually just being a movie. And if they ever do have some kind of progressive message to say, they would just go and let it subtly flow into it, or try to cleverly integrate it in the same veins of the Lego Batman movie with what they did with the two dads or Batman and the Joker's relationship. That's the one thing I'm worried about if they do go heavy-handed with the whole gay thing going on. I mean, I'm already worried enough that they might go a little too heavy-handed on the feminism aspect, especially with Emma Watson as Belle, but I really don't know. But apparently, there has already been early reviews coming out, and so far, things are a little bit mixed. Like, for the most part, critics are saying that this is an okay movie. It does have a lot of problems, and there is no way in hell anyone would be so stupid to say that it's better than the animated Disney classic. But with the but in terms of the elements with LeFou being gay, it's barely in it. It's like really, really subtle. It's like probably like they say that it's probably a moment that would happen for a few seconds, and that's pretty much it. Like, it's basically telling audiences to don't hype themselves up to see Disney's first gay character. And it does make sense when you do think about it, because the thing is that we're talking about LeFou. This is not a big character in Beauty and the Beast. All he is just the sidekick to the villain. He's not as necessarily important as either Belle or Beast, or even the residents in Beast Castle, like Lumiere, Cogsworth, or Mrs. Potts. You know, he's only in there for, like, just, like, some minutes of the movie, and that's pretty much it. Even in the animated film, like, we don't see a lot of LeFou. Like, his biggest moment is singing the song Gaston, and that's all there is to it. Or that, or at the end when he's inside Beast Castle and he's leading the pack to go attack the living objects, and that's pretty much it. So the same thing could probably happen right over here. Like, I do understand giving a bit more character onto LeFou by giving him the gay element, but I think the best way to do it in this case would be is if you would treat LeFou as if he were Smithers from The Simpsons. You know, not necessarily make it a big point of the plot, but more to find some comedy into it. You know, like, if Belle suddenly found LeFou's computer, like, she would turn it on and then suddenly see a picture of Gaston going, "Hello, LeFou, you are quite good at turning me on."
You're not supposed to see that.
You know, like, that would be the best way to go put it in. And I'm sure that with Josh Gad on board as LeFou, he would go and, you know, he would actually add in some great comedic material onto it. So who knows what they could do. But yeah, it does make sense that it's barely going to be seen because LeFou is not necessarily a big character. And especially the fact that with the live action reboot, they really want to go and emphasize all the other A-list celebrities that are in there. Like, they have freaking Emma Watson. They got Dan Stevens. They got Luke Evans. They got Ewan McGregor. They got Ian McKellen. They got Emma Thompson. They want to put, you know, they want to go and put emphasis on those people as well, as much as they probably would with Josh Gad. So yeah, what I'm pretty much saying is that please do not go, like, do not go and watch this movie if the sole reason would be because you want to see LeFou being gay. Because you're going to end up being disappointed and you're not going to get enough of your fill. Like, you're going to go in thinking, that's it? That's all they did with the gay elements, you know? Like, if you are going to go see the live-action reboot of Beauty and the Beast, watch it because it's the live-action reboot of Beauty and the Beast. Like, it has a lot more to offer than just being gay. But this is definitely a good progressive step in the right direction, and I do hope Disney can explore a bit more with gay characters, and who knows? Maybe the next star of a Disney animated feature could actually be a gay character. Who knows what could happen? But if you guys are excited to go see the live-action reboot of Beauty and the Beast, then all you have to do is just wait until March 17th when the film will be out. Alright, now it's time that we will go and end things off with Matt's Pick of the Week. And for this one, interestingly enough, I actually found this on Twitter where a fan sent me the link to this because he was apparently curious about my thoughts onto it. And I was really intrigued about this. Not necessarily intrigued like, I want to see where this is going. Intrigued more like, what the fridge is this? More something like that. And apparently what this is actually, we're going into comics this time. As you guys may remember, not too long ago, I actually did dive into comics when DC announced that they wanted to do a Snagglepuss comic as part of their big crossover with DC and Hanna-Barbera, where conceptually it sounds like a great idea where they want to make Snagglepuss as a gay playwright in 1950s, 1960s Washington, D.C., but the art style, oh good God, it looks like frickin' crap. It really does. When they're trying to make the characters look so realistic, it kind of makes them unattractive, and they're really going into that uncanny territory that you don't necessarily want to go. Well, apparently, DC is at it again with probably the weirdest crossover that you could probably imagine. Now, I'm sure that this kind of idea, like, it has already been done, of course, but not in the way like this. I'm talking, of course, about the DC superheroes and the Looney Tunes. Now, like I said, this is not the first time that this has ever happened before. The Looney Tunes and DC have already done their own crossovers, and I even remember there was this one episode of Duck Dodgers in the 2003 series where Daffy would actually become one of the members of the Green Lantern. But this is a little bit different. Instead of having the entire Looney Tunes tone to be in the to be a part of the DC superheroes, we got the entire tone of the DC comics added and just added in some Looney Tunes characters. So we pretty much got dark, gritty, serious interpretations of the characters. Now, I'm going into my source here on Comic Book Resources, I believe, or Comic Book Research or something like that, I think. Hold on. Let me just get the correct name right over here. It keeps on saying CBR, but hold on. Let me just go into the main page right over here. I apologize, guys. I just want to get the name correctly just for the sake of this website. Let's see. Right over here. Or does it say? Okay, anyways, screw this. Okay. This is coming from CBR. Now let's get into Wait a minute. What's going on? Crap, what happened? I suddenly lost it for some reason. Hold on, I can find it. Fudge nabbit. Okay, hold on a sec. Just write down. It's gonna be easy. It's an easy fix. Don't worry, guys. It's just write down Looney Tunes. There we go. We found it. Okay. Now, back on to our regular schedule. So, let me tell you guys about the comics that DC has planned. And the first one that we got for you guys, going from my source here on CBR, which is Jonah Hex and Yosemite Sam. Now, this story, apparently it says, when miner Yosemite Sam strikes it rich, word gets out as everyone comes gunning in for his wealth, including the notorious Freeling Gang. Really? The Freeling Gang? To protect himself and his new riches, he hires bounty hunter Jonah Hex, but the man protecting him may be his worst nightmare. And yeah, like right over here, we see this realistic depiction of Jonah Hex. And then on the side, you also got a realistic depiction, which is basically a midget dressed up like Yosemite Sam. And right next to him, you got like a giant cowboy bird, which took me a while to look at it because like, why is this character here? Like this random weird cowboy bird. And then I realized, oh God, that's Foghorn Leghorn. Oh man, there's gonna be a lot more differently. Oh God, oh man. Oh good. Oh, this is not gonna be good. Okay. All right, anyways, moving right along, we also got Legion of Superheroes and Bugs Bunny. Yes, of course, there has to be one where Bugs has to appear somewhere. Anyways, it says here, the Legion of Superheroes always thought they have taken their inspiration from the 21st century Superboy, or from the 21st century's Superboy. But when they try to bring that hero into their future time, the team discovers, to their surprise, the Cape Champion isn't who or even what they expected. So yeah, they wanted to meet their idol, Superboy, but it actually turns out that Superboy is actually Bugs Bunny. Alright, the next one that we have right over here is gonna be the Wile E. Coyote and the Roadrunner with Lobo. And it says here, Wile E. Coyote travels to the far reaches of space to hire Lobo to hunt down and kill his greatest nemesis of all time, the Roadrunner. When the Coyote and Lobo are after you, the Roadrunner realizes if they catch him, he's through. And in the picture right over here, you see Lobo in his lair, and you got this really ugly looking Wile E. Coyote with a whole bunch of random sharp teeth in a spacesuit, pretty much holding up a picture with a snarky Roadrunner, like telling him, yeah, that's him, now go get him, you know? It's just, it's real, oh good god, like this is one of the uglier examples. And then you also got one of the more obvious crossovers that they would have to do in this case, which is Martian Manhunter and Marvin the Martian. Now it says right over here, Martian Manhunter tries to halt Marvin the Martian's determination for world domination. John is conflicted with his own Martian identity as he attempts to stop the hapless determined Marvin from blowing Earth to bits in order to gain a clear view of Venus. And right over here, yeah, like you got this, you got Marvin the Martian looking like Marvin the Martian, but with realistic eyes, and somehow these unnecessary amount of decorations onto his helmet. Like the only thing I have to admit that I admit is kind of cool is that you do see in one part of his helmet, like the design is actually with the Martians in one of his cartoons. Now that I admit is cool, but like the amount of details that they put into him is a little bit too much. And then also, probably the most famous one, which is actually Wonder Woman and the Tasmanian Devil. It says, not since the 12 labors of Hercules has a Greek warrior faced as great a danger and as destructive a peril as the Tasmanian Devil. And you have Wonder Woman, which is pretty much fighting off this ugly looking werewolf that's supposed to be Taz with these long, giant, muscly arms. Oh, but that's not all, guys. And also, like, they're in a giant tornado. I forgot to add that as well. Oh, but that's not all, guys. I probably saved the dumbest concept for last. Or at least, if it's going into that direction, this is probably the stupidest of them all. The biggest what-the-fridge crossover that they have thought up, Batman and Elmer Fudd. Batman and Elmer Fudd, ladies and gentlemen. And what is the story about, you may ask? Well, after a chance of meeting with billionaire Bruce Wayne, multimillionaire Elmer Fudd's obsession quickly escalates into stalking Batman through the dark alleys and high-class social settings of Gotham City. And if the cover is what the cover is interpreting is actually correct, and if the plot line is actually going into that direction, this is a comic where Elmer Fudd is hunting Batman. It's freaking Elmer Fudd hunting Batman. What? Are you kidding me? Like, why? Just all of this. Like, all of these comics. I look at every single one of them, and I ask, why? Why do we need this dark, gritty interpretation of the Looney Tunes characters and somehow have them mixed with freaking DC superheroes like Batman? Why do we need things like Wonder Woman and Tasmanian Devil and freaking Elmer Fudd and Batman? That makes no sense. Like, why? And also the art style. They're still going into this weird, uncanny valley, highly realistic look that is unnecessary. We do not need any of this. It's just so weird. It's just, why? All of this is just why. The only one that actually looks good, like, it's like one of them is Marvin the Martian, but Marvin the Martian is so easy to go and try to interpret in many different ways and still look like Marvin the Martian. And also Bugs Bunny, that one is actually good because in the cover that we have over here, Bugs Bunny looks like a freaking cartoon like he's supposed to be. Not like this ugly looking freaking coyote or like this ugly, like this midget with a long mustache with a giant rooster that's in cowboy gear and all that stuff. It's ridiculous. This is honestly so ridiculous. They're trying to pull a DC Cinematic Universe on the Looney Tunes. And it blows my mind. I'm just looking at this going, why? Why do we need this? Why is this a thing that needs to exist? I get rebooting the Hanna-Barbera comics. Like, that makes a lot more sense. If you want to make a serious interpretation of the Looney Tunes, you could do that. But why this? This just makes no sense. You're trying to make the Looney Tunes comedy serious. It's just blowing my mind. I am so confused on what the fridge is DC even trying to do here. And you know what this is? You know what all this is? I figured it out. What all of this is, what DC's trying to do with the Looney Tunes characters, this is pretty much Lunatics Unleashed 2.0. Think about it. You got the Looney Tunes with a brand new, edgy-looking design that is supposed to be more action-oriented than it's supposed to be comedic, and then try to mix in the superheroes to really emphasize on the action. You know, that's the only conclusion that I can think of with this. It's basically trying to do the same thing with Lunatics Unleashed. But a lot of Looney Tunes fans don't even want to be remembered about Lunatics Unleashed. So why are they doing this? It makes no freaking sense. Why interpret the Looney Tunes like this? Like, how far are they going to do with this? Like, how far are they going to go with this idea? Like, are they also going to do it with their recent animated features? Are we going to see suddenly, like, Hawkman with, joining the Owls of Ga'Hoole? Or are we also going to see, Batman fighting Mr. Freeze to save the penguins from Happy Feet? Or are we going to have this dark, gritty, serious, like Christopher Nolan style interpretation of the Lego movie where you see characters like Emmett and Morgan Freeman's character, I forgot who his name is. I apologize. I'm sure I've angered so many people. But anyways, like you see like Emmett and Lord Businessman with giant muscles, and you see like Wild Style as this Megan Fox looking like F cup breast size woman. Or like maybe like they would do a dark gritty interpretation of Storks, like where you see Tulip on the side. It's like, oh no, we lost the baby. What are we gonna do, Junior? And then you just see like this muscled up bird on the side going, I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll make a baby ourselves right now on the floor while they go while they make love, they go punching wolves on the side. You know, it's just, my God, what is DC doing? It blows my mind. You are taking legends of animation and really putting them in a level that shouldn't exist, or putting them in a direction that they should never go to. Seriously, Space Jam makes more freaking sense than this. Seriously, guys, go to CBR.com and see for yourself of all these different interpretations of the Looney Tunes characters. It just makes no sense. I'm just so freaking confused. Why does this need to exist? What the fridge is going on, DC? But anyways, that is all that I've got for this week. So thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of the Animation Podcast. You can go and find more of my work at film-book.com. All you have to do is just search for Mathieu Brunet or the Animation Podcast. You can also find me on my Twitter at AnimeF505. And if you have listened to this podcast on iTunes or any other podcast service, Do us a little favor and rate and review this episode. That would be lovely. And if you are listening to this podcast on YouTube, then hit that little like button on our video and leave us a little comment on your thoughts on the news this week. Tune in next week for the latest episode of the Animation Podcast and all things animation. Thank you guys so much for listening. And until next time, see you later, dudes.